For members only, Golf Smarter number 454 for the week of September 16, published on September 12, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Golf Simplified with Director of Instruction for the Boulders, Donald Crawley.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Donald.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Great to be with you, Fred.
Tell me, you're down at the Boulders in one of my favorite, not necessarily my favorite cities, but my favorite name for a city, Carefree, Arizona.
It's a great place. Just right at the very north end of Scottsdale, 40 minutes from the Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. So we're in Arizona. It's in what we call the desert foothills. 23 feet elevation, breeze blowing through, always sunshine. It's a great place.
Scottsdale is golf mecca.
Yeah, it is. Boy, we've got so many golf courses. At one time, I think the last count is 188 golf courses in this, what we're calling our county, in a very, very small area. So there's lots of golf to be had.
There's a lot of golf to be had, and I have played at a number of the courses, not all of them, down in the Scottsdale area, and was down at the Boulders in the spring this year, and just loved playing there. It was a fun track.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we've got two golf courses. They were built in 1984 and 1985. Jay Moorish designed, who was the old partner with Tom Weisskopf, designed golf courses together. Very good. Desert golf, target golf, they call it. But the north course plays quite differently than the south course. The south course gets all the publicity because it's all the beautiful 3-million-year-old boulders, and you're hitting off of tees elevation, and it's really quite pretty. The north course is challenging in a different way. A lot of doglegs and little elevation change. So it's really quite fun. I enjoy both courses.
I got a chance to play the south course, and I was just on fire. It was the third round in 3 days that my friends and I had played, and we came out to the south course. We warmed up early in the morning, and I just lit it up. I had a great round. I broke 80, which is, at the time, well, it still is. It's rare for me to break 80.
Good for you. That's a good start. That golf course, the south course, is a little shorter, but it's narrow. You must
right.
be a straight hitter to break 80 out of that.
I was that day.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, I was that day. But the views of the course, it's unlike other courses in the Phoenix Scottsdale area. Because you are up in the foothills, these boulders that surround the course are really dramatic and kind of distracting.
It's quite amazing. I've had a couple of funny comments. People says, "Well, how did you truck in those boulders?" And I just laughed. They were half serious. I says, "No." I said, "Believe it or not, the geologists tell you it's like 30 million years ago. This was the bottom of an ocean, and these granite rock croppings are just from the bottom of the floor of the ocean, and of course all the sand around it's got washed away, which has left this sandy, dooney kind of golf course around these dramatic boulders."
You'd wonder why, because golf course architects are notorious for moving things around and changing things. But this one, Moorish definitely had to work around the topography that was there.
Yeah, and you play through some rocks and definitely down some ravines and around, particularly on number one. I mean, if you remember the first hole, it's dramatic. It's a very, very narrow tee shot, and you hit to a plateau, and then you're going downhill to a very narrow chute, and then one of the boulders rock cropping is sitting right behind the first green, and then people just stop and hold up play and start taking photos. So it's really spectacular.
Thank you for reminding me. I do remember that first hole, and I think it's because we started early. I didn't want to take out the driver, and I hit my forewood right in the middle of the fairway and was just so that downhill shot. I bogeyed the hole because of a three putt. I made it onto the green.
Well, you did a very wise thing, to drive the ball straighter. The first thing what I call a weekend golfer or a traveling recreational golfer can do is to hit a wood with more loft. So what you did, whether you did it consciously or subconsciously, or you weren't warmed up, when you take that forward with about 18, 20 degrees of loft, you're giving yourself a better chance of driving the ball in the fairway. And that's one of the strategic points that the amateur recreational golfer should consider unless they're a very straight driver of the ball.
Why is it so much easier to hit the ball straight with the forward than with the driver?
Let's say a driver on average is 10.5 degrees of loft. So your contact point on the back of a golf ball is pretty much on the equator, meaning a 10-degree driver is going to be hitting right in the back of the ball, which minimizes the backspin. That's one reason drivers are going farther, because we want the trajectory to be high but have no spin on the ball, rather like a knuckleball from baseball. But if the face is open or closed, you're going to impart side spin on the ball, and the ball's going to slice or hook dramatically. But when you use a 20-degree lofted club, you're hitting underneath the equator. You're getting a little bit more backspin, which counteracts the side spin, which is why even the great players like Tiger Woods will sometimes drive with his 5-wood, hit what we call his stinger, and he hits the thing much straighter. Phil Mickelson is driving with a 13-degree club. He's driving with more loft so that he can hit it straighter.
So interesting. And I thought it was just because of the amount of the power of the swing that I would put behind it or something. But it really is the smaller club face allows you to get below the equator. And the
it's to do with loft. So the short answer is, with more loft, you're going to hit the ball straighter, and the backspin is counteracting the side spin. That's why you hit your 9-iron straighter than you can hit your 5-iron. Mm. It's not more loft. It's more forgiving, which is a big part of golf strategy. Jack Nicklaus was terrific. People didn't realize, as strong and as long as Jack was, he drove with a 3-wood most of his career. People just didn't know it. You know, and he just smashed it a mile, and of course, if he did hit it offline, he didn't go as far offline. We went through an era where they were making drivers with 7 and 8 degrees loft. It was crazy because people just, A, couldn't get the ball in the air, and B, when they did, it went sideways. But now you'll see it's become more progressive, more and more loft on the driver to hit a higher launch angle with less backspin. And that's the key. That's why the ball goes further now.
Well, also the materials are a lot different now that they're making the club heads with.
Well, no question, the material too, with the Plutonic shafts and the titanium faces and the gold, you know, covered golf balls, all of that helps for sure. But they've done a great job with the technology. Have you ever hit golf balls on a machine that measures your impact? The famous one at the moment is either TrackMan or FlightScope. Have you ever had the opportunity to do that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting because what it does, it really measures the impact and it tells you the launch angle, the spin rate, and your club face, as well as your angle of attack. These are all things that I call the impact factors that affect how the ball performs. And golf is a game to control the golf ball. So back to where we started the story, you're on number one, it's a tight fairway. He says, I don't know if I can hit my driver and squeeze it through that bottleneck, which is the Boulder South Course has a lot of driving holes like that. You hit a forward, a little bit more loft, a little bit more spin. You gave up 2 yards of distance and gained a lot of accuracy. So you improved your impact, made a great strategic decision on that first tee.
Well, thank you. But why is it, you just said I get 2 yards difference now. Come on.
People are all excited. They think that the driver is going to go like 30 yards difference. Well, it often doesn't because of this side spin factor. So just think some simple numbers. You can drive the ball 200 yards, but you're hitting with your face 2 degrees open. That's 200 yards and 24 yards of slice. So the end result is an over 200 yards is spinning sideways as well as going forward. You make the same mistake with a 3-wood of, say, 16 degrees of loft. You're only going to be giving up 8 yards of distance from the fact that the ball isn't spinning as much sideways. So people think, well, no, I thought my driver was going to go 30 yards further than my 3-wood. And the answer is no, maybe 7 or 8 yards is about all it ends up. For, again, I'm talking about the recreational golfer who's not hitting the perfect impact. So what I do when I teach is I'm always trying to improve the impact. If I can get the club to hit the ball better, then the result is better.
I think
did that just blow you away, Fred, about all that? All that good stuff about ballistics and just blew your head away?
I'm trying to take notes and absorb it all. but I think that a lot of people would be willing to take the chance to sacrifice the slice if they can end up hitting their approach shot with a 7-iron versus hitting with their hybrid.
You know,
or is it just because we like to, or does it just like to see things fly as far as they can?
Yeah, typically. I mean, when I say, you know, and I give a lot of golf lessons, and the guys, and particularly men in particular, but even women say, well, what's the one thing you want to do? The number one thing that golfers want is consistency. So I ask the question, explain to me what consistency is. Well, humans as we are think consistency is hitting every shot perfect. I said, that's not consistent, that's perfection, and you're not going to achieve it. So, okay, let's move on from consistency. What you really mean is I want to hit more good shots and less bad shots, right? How do I do that? Well, that's partly on the swing mechanics, but let's tie in the game of golf and the strategy of hitting a little bit more loft than you thought necessary in order to keep the ball in play. So when we talk about this desert golf, this target golf, you've got to get what we call the white on green. That's the white ball on the green fairway. So we're back to the story of let's hit the forward off the tee and to make sure you're driving it in the fairway. So you're giving up, back to my little story, 7 or 8 yards of distance, but you've got the thing in the fairway rather than chopping it out of the desert scrub.
Not being a teacher, but by getting the opportunity to talk to a lot of teachers, I think one of the things that I've learned most important about how to improve my game was this quest for consistency. I think there needs to be a mindset shift on how do you deal with adversity, because nobody, and with anyone who watches the tour, consistency is elusive at best.
And, no, you're absolutely right.
And you're going to get yourself in trouble more often than not. The key is, how do you deal with that trouble?
Great thing. I mean, for the quote I used just the other day in a lesson is the consistency story. Kevin Sutherland, Champions Tour player, shot 59 on the senior tour sometime this year. In his first round, he shot 59. You know what he shot in his second round? 74.
That's golf.
15 strokes worse in one round. We're talking a world-class player.
On the same golf course.
On the same golf course, same guy, one day later with more experience, and he's still 15 strokes worse. So that, I think, is a good story. I'll always remember it. You know, can't always be consistent. But you're right, Bob. What can you do to handle adversity? Adversity is really learning to control your mishits. And that's a physical thing and an emotional thing. So, for example, I go out and I whack it out of bounds. All right, I get on a hit this. Crummy shot. Okay, so now there's a couple of choices I've got. One, I could get mad, I could get frustrated, or worse, which a lot of people listening to this would be doing this, would start to beat themselves up. Oh, I'm such a terrible driver. I am hopeless. I'm no good. And they get into this negative self-talk, and before you know it, you dig yourself a big hole and you fall in it. Where the champion mind is to say, darn it, just hooked it. Never mind, I'm going to re-tee it I'm going to drive this one down the fairway, knock it on the green, make a birdie with my second ball, and end up making a bogey. So there's a mindset involved in how you play the game. Very important.
And when you're out on the course with some of your students and you do a playing lesson, which I think is so incredibly valuable as opposed to just working on somebody's swing, are these the kind of things that you try to walk them through, is how to handle mishits?
No question. I mean, I do more and more of that. I do less and less mechanical lessons and more on the golf course. And you have to have a pretty good handle of your own mechanics. So it's important that perhaps you can't fix everything. But one thing I stress is I want everyone to know is what is your natural tendency? So I'd use myself as an example. I tend to swing a little flat. I tend to hook the ball. I know that. So I work on trying to control how much I hook it. And when I get on the golf course, if I do hook it, I've got to know what can I do, not necessarily to fix everything, but to at least give myself a chance to get around the golf course. So, Fred, you and I haven't played to golf together yet. Hopefully on your next visit to the Bowlers, we'll get a chance to do that.
Would love that.
But I would look at you and say, here's your tendency, Fred. You tend to do da-da-da-da-da. Therefore, this is what I want you thinking. This is what I want you, where I want you to aim on the golf course. So let's say you tend to fade the ball, which 90% of golfers tend to fade the driver.
Yep.
So the first thing to do is don't aim it down the fairway.
Right.
Aim it down the left side. Because if you don't fade it, you've just got a little pull in a semi-rough on the left side of the fairway. If you do fade it, you're in the middle of the fairway. So a lot of people who fade it, the ball, haven't fixed the fade, but they come down telling me, well, I've been working on a closed stance. I said, well, why on earth, if you fade the ball, would you aim to the right? Well, what are you thinking?
Because they want to be able to draw the ball.
Yeah, but you see, that's absolutely missed. Closing your stance has no influence on the golf ball whatsoever. It's the absolute biggest myth. Do you know where that comes from, closing your stance?
No, and I was going to ask you, then why would they possibly do that?
Okay, so all the golfers are listening to this. Thank you, golfers, for listening to this. Okay, so this is Donald Crawley. I'm a Brit. I grew up playing golf in Britain. So, and I studied under some of these old, crusty golf pros from way back when. So let's just go back 100 years ago. 100 years ago, with the great players, there were all these Scottish guys, you know, Harry Vardon, Braid, J.H. Taylor, and then let's bring in Bobby Jones, this era. Okay, so they played with hickory-shafted golf clubs. They played with a rock, used to be called a gutta-percha ball or a feathery, terrible old golf balls. They couldn't get that thing to go 150 yards. So between the conditions, windy, sandy golf courses, crappy equipment, they had to stand closed, have a very strong grip, swing flat around the body, use their wrists a lot and turn over to make the ball hit these low-running hooks. That's what they did, and they shot probably a great player in those years with the conditions and the equipment. If they shot 80, they were a world champion. Okay, so now fast forward, that gets passed down. So Tommy Armour, whatever, Bobby Jones in particular, let's close the stance and look how Bobby hits this beautiful draw from a closed stance. Okay, now they've worked the swing coming way from the inside. Fast forward 100 years. You don't need to close your stance and start the ball out to the right and hit a low hook to come around. With the equipment you have now, you can get the ball up in the air and hit it over 150 yards anyway. So let's just tie this in. Why doesn't the closed stance work? In the modern golfer, Fred's going to go ahead and just close his stance and not let the closing of the stance influence the swing path and allow the golf club to hit from the inside and close the face. All Fred does is close his stance and goes ahead swinging outside and hitting a pull fade.
Wait, let's make sure that we understand what you mean by close the stance. That means that your front foot is
forward.
Forward, right? Your back foot, the back foot, the one away from the target is pulled back versus an open stance is opening your body to the target.
Yeah, and just your feet. You see, and that's the thing. People close the stance. So here's typically, we'll talk about the right-handed golfers. So forgive me, I'll talk for right-handed golfers, and lefties, you're really smart, you can flip it over. Right-handed golfer is going to pull the right foot back. That's called a closed stance. But typically, your feet are just aimed really off to the right. Now, what you and most golfers don't understand is your upper body, which is your alignment of your arms and your shoulders, is what influences the swing path more than your feet. So even though you've closed your stance, that's your feet, your upper body is typically left open. Open is to the left. So you can close your stance all you want, but if your upper body is lined up to the left, you will swing to the left. The influence of an out to win or golf swing going to the left opens a face and the ball slices, which is why people come to me and say, Donald, I'm closing my stance and I'm still slicing. and the answer is your feet have got nothing to do with it. Let's close your upper body. Let's close your arms and your shoulders. Then you're on the right track to influence your swing path, which will influence the club face, which will end result give you a chance to draw the ball.
So it's not, and it's not because a lots of times someone will go, you know, your feet were, you know, your ball went way right, and do you realize your feet were pointing exactly in the direction where your ball went, and they're trying to compensate that with opening their shoulders. Is that what they think they're doing, but they're really not?
Yeah, you're right. So let's go back to the fader and the slicer. Mm-hmm. So the fader and the slicer, why do they slice? Now, you're going to get a difference of opinion. Some people would say, well, I'm hitting across the ball. That's going to slice. Well, in reality, the face of the golf club, if it's open to the swing path, the ball will fade. You are actually hitting at a glancing blow. Okay, so that's what causes a slice. People don't understand that. Golf pros, in fact, I'm doing a seminar for golf pros on September the 22nd here at the Boulders, and I'm going to have 50 young golf professionals, and they're going to not realize what actually causes a slice. They just don't know. They just don't get it. Well, let me tell you, the ball slices when the face is open. So just get your mind wrapped around it's about the club face. So if the face is open, you will align your arms and your shoulders to the left to compensate for that slice. When you align your arms and shoulders to the left, you will produce an outside-in swing. So it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, on day one, you hit with the face open. The ball sliced, so you learned over a period of time, 1 year, 2 years, 50 years, to line your arms and shoulders to the left, and now you've grooved an outside-in swing. Then you come along and says, yeah, but if I close my stance, if I drop my right foot back, I'm going to stop my slice. Wrong. And that's why it doesn't work. And I'm kind of glad for that, because a lot of people will have to keep coming to Donald Crawley and asking, how do I get rid of my slice? And I promise you that closing your stance isn't the answer.
Wow. That's really interesting.
So, the answer is, the true answer is, and I hope I don't sound flippant. I've got a dry sense of humor. I'm a Brit, so remember that.
You're a Brit? Like, wait a minute. I thought that accent was right from Arizona.
Yeah, East Arizona. Long way east.
It didn't sound like a local.
So all the slices, okay, listen up, slices. If you're slicing the ball, go and get some help for someone to teach you how to close the club face, not your stance. Mm. Close your club face and you'll get rid of your slice.
So then it doesn't matter if we're playing a resort course that has wide open fairways or the local or your country club, which the fairways are much narrower. And that's mainly the difference, right, between country club and resort courses is how wide the fairways are. I would think.
I think, Fred, it depends where you go, but I hear what you're saying. I think as a rule of thumb, if you're playing a narrow golf course, so here the Boulders, the south course is narrower than the north course, I do not hit a driver on the south course until hole number 8.
Wow.
And the reason is number 1 is narrow. Fred, you did a wise thing, as I've mentioned, you hit it forward. I hit a fairway wood off the first tee. Get it in the fairway. Hole number 2 is a par 3. Hole number 3 is a dog leg to the right. If I hit my driver, I drive it through the fairway. So again, I hit a fairway wood. Hole number 4, I should hit driver. So I'm sort of on the fence between driver and fairway wood. Number 5 is a split fairway. You can take the gamble and hit the driver, or you could hit the fairway wood hybrid on the right side of the fairway. It's like we call a split fairway. Number 6 is a short par 4. You don't need a driver. Number 7 is a par 3. And then number 8 is the first one where the fairways opens up and it's a long par 4. I need to hit driver so I can get home in 2. So the strategy of the golf, the strategy of the game fits into what the golf course is giving me.
So interesting.
So I don't know if the listeners here, because I've never played the course. I hope you get to come out here and play. I hope I get a chance to help you with your golf game. What I do a lot is what I call a quick fix before you play golf. So if I see Fred and says, look, I don't have time to work on my game. You know, I'm a busy guy, but help me. Then I'll give you a quick, what I call a quick fix or an hour lesson to say, Fred, here's your tendencies. Here, this is one or two things you could do right now without having to reinvent the wheel, and you can control your golf ball better. So I improve the impact, I improve your ball flight without having to wrap your head around too many things. So that's the first step. Let's give you a quick fix on your mechanics. But then when we play golf, I want you thinking correctly, and I want you making good decisions, good strategic decisions, playing the percentage game, meaning give yourself a chance to succeed. Don't try and thread that ball through a 2-inch hole through the trees when you could be pitching it over the trees and on the green and saving yourself a stroke.
Well, we have our number one rule here. Never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
That's so true. Or an angry shot, which is usually happening, or an angry hole.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I definitely want to be able to play the Boulders again because I did succeed in the South course. I had a good round, but it was the first time. And I want to, now that I kind of have a sense of how to play that course, I want to go back and try it again.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, one of the things that I stress is, you know, I get a plug in here. My website is called Golf Simplified.
Oh, so I wasn't going to let you leave without discussing Golf Simplified. I wanted to go there next.
Yeah, good. Okay, good. Well, let's move in there because that's what I teach the other instructors here at the Boulders with me. I teach them Golf Simplified. I'm doing a seminar for PGA professionals, Golf Simplified. Now, that's my, you know, little title to it. That's a way to describe it, but boy, for myself included, I'm ready to play a PGA tournament. I've got to simplify my thought process so that I give myself a chance to succeed and play better. Not a matter of how much you think about it, it's a matter of what you think about and the correct thoughts.
So then Golf Simplified for you to kind of summarize that, but that is the name of your school. That is the name of your website, correct? GolfSimplified.com?
GolfSimplified.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll send people there. And so you give lessons beyond just what you offer on the website. If people want to come down and visit you in Carefree, Arizona, they can, you should definitely, if you're going down there, I highly recommend. It is a bit of a drive from from the central Scottsdale area, you're going far north, but Yeah. It's worth the drive. It's a beautiful drive. And the course is rather breathtaking compared to a lot of the other desert courses. It's very different than other desert courses.
It really is. One of the things, when I've been out in this, what we call the Phoenix Valley, since 1982, and we only had two or three golf courses then. And then when all the resort courses were built in the mid-'80s, the Boulders was built with enough space that the houses don't encroach the golf course. What you'll find is the other golf courses in this area that have a good reputation, when they were first designed, they were beautiful because it was just a golf course and desert landscape all around you. But now, of course, because of real estate, they've got track homes built up right next to the fairway. I mean, I've got a biased opinion about the Boulders. It's one of the prettiest golf courses, both of them are, because you're out there looking at foothills and you've got a house that's 100 yards off the fairway, not something right up against you. You know, the left side of your driving aiming point.
If you like to take photographs when you're traveling, going to golf courses, I like to do that. I like to take pictures of golf courses. Some of the courses in Arizona, you know, it's mostly sky. It's very flat. You know, there's not a lot of excitement except of a couple of saguaro cactus. But the photographs, and I'm going to put a couple of mine up, the photographs from the Boulders South Course are so dramatic. I think one of my favorite ones was the giant saguaro cactus right in the center of a bunker.
Oh, that'd be hole number seven. Yeah, right. Yeah, you've got these beautiful, actually, that hole is probably the most photographed, because you've got a massive hole boulder where, I don't know if you played, what tees did you play? Did you play the white tees?
We played the white copper combo. Which is 125 slope. So the back tees were about 140 slope. That was about 125. That's more of where our game is.
Which is good. I mean, you know, the whole national push tee, play the tee forward makes sense. So you play a golf course, doesn't matter which tee, as long as you enjoy it. Whereas my mind was going on that hole you were referring to, the blue tee, is elevated, which gives you an incredible view. It does make the hole harder, but it's elevated, and you stood on the top of a big boulder, you know, say it's millions of years old, that all the sand is washed around from underneath. It looks like it's going to tipple over. And you play from that tee to the hole you're referring to the green, and then on the right side in the bunker, there's this massive saguaro cactus sitting there, which is, it's a beautiful view. Unfortunately, I keep hitting my ball behind it, so I'm not sure I like it too much.
Well, it's the only hole I double bogeyed that day.
There you go. That's why you remember the cactus.
Yes, exactly. But I also want to mention that, you know, you talked about the homes and the residential area that was built up, but there's a magnificent resort at the Boulders as well. It's a great destination place that you can get away, get some, you know, some great rest, but also two rounds of golf right there on the property.
Yeah, there's 162 casitas, which is, it's not a high rise of hotel and a block, and it's these casitas that are scattered around actually on the South Course. So you get like your own little apartment, and they're just, they're real wonderful because they're so unobtrusive, and then you can walk right from your casino, you know, down for breakfast or out to the golf course. So it's, in fact, I found this place years ago and I played it. I said, well, this is a beautiful place. And then I came on my anniversary before I started working here 11 years ago. And so when we just had a little weekend, what we call a staycation, and we just came, you know, an hour drive away and stayed here for a couple of nights. And it was beautiful. Mm. And I'm a golf pro, so it's like usually I don't go vacationing on golf resorts, but it really is. It's fabulous. It's a great place to stay. It's a one-stop shop. You don't have to jump into cars and drive to the golf course. You just jump on a golf cart and get a shuttle right to the first tee and off you go.
Well, that's a very nice testimony for a golf professional who's like, yeah, I'm going to go stay at a golf course. That's pretty rare. Well, I also want to congratulate you. You've received some great accolation on your golf instruction. You've been named PGA Teacher of the Year by various magazines, and in Arizona. That's also a testimony to what a great teacher you are.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you. I'd humbly say that, fortunately for me in my business, if you get results, if you help people, then those kind of awards seem to follow. And I've been fortunate. I've been on the national top 100 teacher list for 20 years. And then I've had PGA Teacher of the Year twice and some other little accolades. And it's all based on me helping you. If Fred comes to play golf and I help you a little bit, but I just help your thought process, your routine, get rid of a little bit of the fade, or more importantly, get you to shoot a lower number because we work on your short game, then Fred remembers me and then sends in a nice note on TripAdvisor or whatever, and suddenly the powers that be say, you must know what you're doing, and they give me a nice award. So it's very rewarding, and it keeps me honest and working hard to try and help people improve the game. I'm still a golf nut, so I'm still trying to get better. So as long as you express that, then those kind of trophies follow.
And Golf Simplified, to me, is very similar to Golf Smarter in that my sense, what you're trying to teach, is that it's not all about your mechanics, that there's a way to get lower scores, and there's a simple way for you to teach how to lower scores that's not just focusing on banging balls all day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Golf Smarter. You've got it right, Fred, because it is. It's being smarter, and it's thinking, as I say. What if golf is about a routine, making sure you're in a consistent routine, which will help improve your consistency. So even if your mechanics aren't perfect, you can still control your golf ball, and you can still keep your ball in play. But once you get within 50 yards, that's where the rubber really meets the road. You've got to be able to chip and putt it well in order to score. When I do articles and I write about who's won what, and we think it's because they drive the ball 320 yards. Here's a quick thing about scoring. Bubba Watson, who's a, I can't say he's a friend, but he lives here, so I see him occasionally. Anyway, Bubba hits the ball 350 yards, and it's ridiculous how far Bubba can hit it. What people don't realize is Bubba is the best long, what we call a lag putter, on tour this year, which means is Bubba Watson has had the least amount of three putts of anyone else. But we don't remember that. We remember Bubba hits at 350, but Bubba's a heck of a putter. Mm. Tiger Woods, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus. They're great players. They were the best putters that ever walked on the face of the earth.
I got a good one for you. And I know you have to run. You have a lesson coming up. But Tiger Woods is needing a coach. If Tiger Woods were to reach out to you, it's like, hey, Bubba told me that you teach over there and I'm heading out. I'm visiting Bubba, hanging out. And he was interested in looking for coach. He's looking to hire somebody and he called you. What would you tell him you thought his issue was and how you would help him?
Well, I've been quoted saying this before, so I'll quote it again on live. And Tiger will probably blacklist me if he hears this.
Oh, yeah, Tiger's going to listen to this show. Right.
he does. It's amazing. He's got a whole camp that finds out this stuff. But anyway, Tiger, my humble opinion is Tiger's mechanics aren't the issue. I tell you what, he's had good instructors his whole life. His father, he's had
Butch.
I've forgotten the gentleman.
Butch Harmon.
Before that, the guy from California taught him during, I've forgotten his name.
Not him.
But anyway, then Butch, who's a close personal friend, is a terrific teacher, did a great job. Hank Haney is a close friend. Hank did a terrific job with him. Sean Foley has done his thing the last two or three years. But Tiger's mechanics, it's Tiger's body. The question is, can Tiger's body, hang on it? And, can he handle it? Because Tiger can do whatever he wants to do. He's so talented. If he wants to swing flat and around his body with a closed face, he'd still win major championships. If he wants to steepen his plane a little bit and start aiming left and trying to cut the ball and do that, he can do whatever he wants. He's so talented. But will his body hold up to it? Will his knee allow him to rotate through? Now he's got back and knee issues with golf. I really have emphasis at people with back, knee, and hip issues because you've got those joints that take a lot of stress. So if Tiger called me, I said, Tiger, we need to get your body in as good a shape as possible. Not a matter of changing your swing plane.
Yeah, but this is a guy who has, you know, he's very dedicated to his workouts. He has, you know, he's changed the style of body for a golfer. What specifically would you have him work on? What would you tell him?
Yeah, it's not about mechanics. It's not about his playing and stuff. I mean, you know, because Butch had one thing with him. Butch basically shortened his golf swing because Tiger's swing used to be too much across the line with the face closed. Tiger and Butch shortened him up, and that helped. But then Hank, and I agree 100%, he actually had the face closed and the swing was too inside and up, and so he rounded it, flattened it with the face more open, which helped. And then Sean Foley felt that he was too much around and open, so then he bent him over more and steepened the plane, particularly with the plane of his shoulder turn. So they've been changing some mechanics. The Tiger needs to, A, get healthy, and B, get his putter back to where it used to be. And both Butch and Hank have told me he would spend hours upon hours working on chipping and putting. He's had the greatest short game since Seve Ballesteros. So Tiger, what we're going to do, get you healthy, and let's get that short game ranked up. Now, the one thing I would say with the mechanics is his big fear still is the driver. And I'd have a feeling about the driver, the way he's going about it. There's one mechanical thing I'd have him try and do with his driver.
Do you think he he's cautious about it? Do you sense that he's not confident with his driver when he steps up with it?
Oh, yeah. No, he's not confident with his driver.
Interesting.
No, he's fearful. We all are. We all fear and miss. I thought Hank, everyone liked it, but Hank did a good book called The Big Miss.
Yeah.
And, of course, it depends on how you interpret it. I thought it was very good. I thought it was Hank's honest opinion of what he experienced with 6 years with Tiger. Mm-hmm. But The Big Miss was right. Tiger is trying to put what we call double cross it, which is to pull hook it. So if you set up down the left side to hit a fade and then you hit a hook, you are royally screwed for the rest of the day.
Yes, you are.
You are so fearful of the left side, and I believe that Tiger is fearful of that miss and then compensates because he's human. So I'd like to do something a little different with his driver and get him driving it better. But, you know, you'd have to get into can his body hold up what he really wants to do? And maybe it can't, and maybe only Tiger knows that. So I suppose I'd never get the privilege to find out what he physically can and can't do until you work with him one-on-one when there's no cameras and recordings around you.
So would you advise him to try to be a little more patient about his recovery of his injuries? Is that what you're talking about, his body? Is that just take some more time off? You're not fully healed yet, right?
Oh, no, he's been off. Look at him, the last 3 years, he's hardly played. What between his personal issues and then injury, he's hardly played the last 3 years. But I don't think he came back too soon, but I'm not sure that whatever surgery he's had or therapy he's had, that he's recovered. But I don't think time is a particular issue. He's got plenty of time to rest. I wish I could go back and quote at the top of my head, but it's like, how many weeks has he played? He was off for 8 months and then back for 2 months and then off for 3 months. And, you know, I think the guy needs to play. And Tiger, what used to do, he used to play himself into a tournament. He would practice 36 holes a day on the week before the tournament. He would play himself into shape, which I think is terrific, because he sure as heck wasn't working on his mechanics and fiddling with his face path and angle and stuff. He was just out there playing the game as he knows it, which I think is terrific. And there's a testimony for you and I talking about golf smarter, golf simplified. Tiger Woods is the ultimate smartest guy. I don't know about the simplest, but the smartest guy, just like Jack Nicklaus was. That's why they win major tournaments.
Fascinating.
They learned to play the game. So no, I don't think telling Tiger patience would work. I think he'd fire you in a first second if you said, Tiger, be patient.
I don't think I'd get the conversation far enough into it to allow him to fire me.
Yeah, so the next time I bump into Tiger, I'll tell him to call Fred Green and Golf Smarter, and he'll probably right on the phone to you, right?
Yeah, he'll keep walking right by you. Anyway, well, if you're headed there, what?
I was just thinking, okay, so Fred says it's been a wonderful conversation. I'm teaching a young golf professional from Mexico City. He is a wonderful golfer, and he is one shot away for us interviewing him on our next podcast because he's going to be out there on the mainstream. He's currently playing the PGA Latin American Tour, which is the feed-in to the web.com, which is the feed-in to the PGA Tour. So he is getting ready to go and play the second half of the Latin American Tour. And I've got to get him shave about one stroke off a round, and then that way he'll be on web.com next year, then he'll be on PGA Tour the next year. So in 2 years, I can take my golf simplified on the road on the tour, traveling with my young friend, J.D. Fernandez.
That's what I was going to... J.D. Fernandez?
I remember his name. Look him up. He's a young man. He's a terrific guy. I've been working with him for 4 years. He keeps putting up with me. His golf swing is terrific. And you see him swing, and people think he's Rory McIlroy. So I sent his video to a couple of my friends, like Butch and Hank, and I said, look, take a look at me. Give me a second opinion. What do you see here? And they said, are you teaching Rory? I said, no, I wish, but he does look like him, and he swings like him too. So, but we've got to get him. He's a couple of strokes away from Rory's game, but only one stroke away from being out there at least competing on the big platform. So,
good luck with him. That sounds. We'll definitely keep an eye on him.
Yeah, as you can tell, I mean, I love this guy, and he's working hard. So I'm going to work with him today. He'll jump on a plane, and then he'll be down in South America for, 3 weeks at a time, and then come home for a week. And he's doing that. He's on tour. I'm really rooting for him, not because I'm his coach, but just because he's a good kid. So I hope he makes it. He's got the ability.
I hope you'll come back on the show sometime. I've learned a tremendous amount and enjoyed speaking to you. Will you come back sometime?
It would be my pleasure, Fred. Thank you for having me, and golf. Everyone listening, Golf Smarter, Golf Simplified, come and visit me at the Boulders and keep listening to Fred's podcast. It's good stuff, and I hope I get another opportunity to chat to you a little bit more.
There are a handful of instructors that we have back again and again, and I hope he becomes one of them. I think he's great, and I think he understands what we're trying to do, and we understand what he's trying to do, so hopefully we'll hear from him a lot. Just wanted to put out another reminder about Game Golf. Even though the price has recently been dropped to $199 here in the U.S., Golf Smarter members still have till October 1st to receive an additional 10% discount with the checkout code GOLFSMARTER. To hear more about Game Golf and the exclusive discount, listen to my two conversations with CEO John McGuire on episodes number 450 and 451. And if that's not enough, there are two videos that I've done about Game Golf on our YouTube channel, Golf Smarter TV. They are at, you can go to YouTube or you can just get them at golfsmarter.com. One video is my round with John, and then another one is my personal introduction, review, and instructions on how simple and valuable Game Golf can be for your game. Maybe that's why Lee Westwood, Graham McDowell, Jim Furyk, the Golf Channel, PGA of America have all invested in the company. That's got to tell you something, right? Remember, though, Golf Smarter is the only place on the planet or in the cloud that you can find this additional discount. That's why we have to keep it private and make it only available to the members. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.